For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record. For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's
right. Welcome to The Clink, coming to you live from the Mount Woodgie Studios this afternoon here in Currumbin on the Gold Coast. I have a man who has an amazing story of redemption. Joe Kwon was sentenced to 13 years jail for drugs. How do you go from that to training Google's staff? I don't know, but we're going to find out this afternoon, and we're going to find out his story of redemption. Joe, welcome to The Clink, mate. How are you?
Mate, finally, you got me here.
Finally! Wow, you're a busy man, Joe.
Well, I've been following your stuff. I'm always driving, listening to your podcast, mate. You're doing some great stuff, man.
Thank you, mate. And vice versa. Look, to be honest with you, you caught my eye some time ago. I come across the ConFit thing on Instagram, and I was like, well, hang on a sec. What's this? I want to know more. And obviously, then you know, off the back of some great media, through your hard work, you started to really take off. And I think, you know, as we'll find out in your story of redemption, it's just continued to roll for you, hasn't it, in an amazing, positive way?
Yeah, mate. So as soon as it came out, you know, I had one mission, which was, you know, I've seen so many good guys coming to prison, and when they get out, they have the lack of opportunity to kind of I don't want to say the word reintegration, but to just hard to change their life around. It's really hard without the support, you know, and they keep on going back into prison, and you know, that this revolving door of recidivism, you know, it's so high in Australia. Yep. For a country like Australia, it is very high, especially amongst juvies as well. And, you know, I really saw myself, if I don't do something now, for myself, I'm going to go back in as well. And a lot of these guys, they're going back in, and I wanted to do something to not just to help myself, but to help others as well. Since I've been on that mission, you know, since I've been on that track, mate, so many people have, you know, reached out to try to help. And, you know, this issue is not something that one man can do. It's so many people need to get involved in this.
100%. Joe, I'd like to, for everybody that's listening, not everybody would know who Joe Kwon is. You have a very colourful background, one that you've obviously definitely learnt from. Let's go back there, mate. Let's go back to where it sort of was a different world for Joe, and Joe was involved in some pretty heavy stuff, which ended up with you doing 13 years.
Yeah, mate. To be honest with you, it was just a slow, natural progression. You know, I guess a lot of people say you're a product of the environment. Mm. You know, so my mum came here in the early 80s. She's an opera singer. So she got a scholarship to sing at the Sydney Conservatorium of Music. And she's a soprano opera singer. And, you know, she couldn't speak a word of English. So she came to Australia as a student. You know, her passion was music. And, you know, I know for a fact growing up with a musician that music does not pay. You know, so she's a student. So she can't get any government benefits because she's an international student. So she's working two jobs. She's studying English. You know, and she's, you know, wants to become an aspiring opera singer as well. So I'm seeing this, and she's, you know, she's doing this, and I'm young as well.
Were you an only child, Joe? Was there other siblings in the family? Yeah, okay. Yep.
I'm only child. Child, yeah. So no father in the picture. So it's just you and my mum. Yeah, exactly. And she, you know, she's working so hard, but, you know, passion's one thing, but, you know, she's trying to raise a child at the same time as well. And you know what it's like. She does her best, but I've spent a lot of time on my own, and, you know, I've always watching my mom trying to make ends meet. So my mom always goes, you know, there's no man in the house, you're the man in the house. You know, you've got to look after yourself, and you've got to be the man. And for me, that resonated differently. I'm like, okay, I've got to make some money, I've got to become a man. And, you know, when I was young, I didn't want to ask my mom for money. Ever did I ask my mom for money. So I used to steal a lot of things. You know, I see kids in my school, in my primary school, you know, they've got parents, they've got support. I never really had anything, you know, and I just always compare myself with other kids. So, you know, I always go to the New Jersey Steel staff. And, you know, when you're in need,
yeah,
my mind started ticking, how do I make money? How do I make money? And as a kid, this is in primary school, right? So I'm not the type of guy to go stand over other kids. So one day I came across porno magazines in news agencies back in the days when they
used the old Hustler and the old Playboys.
Yeah, remember they used to be in the plastic covers and stuff. And yeah. I knew the ones in the plastic covers.
Were the good ones.
I used to always knock these off. As a kid.
The ones that you couldn't read that you had to pay for.
I knew they're the good ones. So I used to steal them all the time and take it to my primary school.
Yeah.
And I used to sell it to the other kids. Small page, $1. Double spread page, $2. I was the richest kid in primary school, man. You know, and I'm there eating stuff from the canteen. I'm like, finally, I'm getting food. You know, I had the money. That did not last long because, you know what kids are like. That some of the kids went home and they got caught with these pages of new pictures and stuff. And obviously, kids, they're going to give you up. You know, parents are going to be like, where the hell did you get this? And so one of the parents have reported me to the school principal, and they've gone through my bag and they've found a shitload of porno mags and dirty pictures. And my mom, as busy as she is, she got called into the primary school. I'm sitting in the principal's office, and my mom, poor mom, she hardly speak a word of English. Like, she can't understand, like, minimal conversation. And the principal's like, okay, do you understand your son has been sending pornographic material? And she's like, what do you mean? He pulled out all the porno mags and laid it on the table. My mom just looked at me and goes, you little shit. Boom, back into the head. You know, and that's how I started. And I'm always figuring a way, look, how am I going to make money?
Male is the provider, isn't he? In your culture, the man is the man of the house, mate. The wife takes care of the cooking, and I don't mean this to be sexist or anything like that, so please, listeners, don't look any deeper this than what it is. I'm speaking from the experience that I've had around some wonderful Korean men and friends that I have. Their heart they wear on the sleeve, as obviously you've grown up at, and it's a proud, you're very, very proud, well. Very proud.
Especially during our parents' generation as well.
Yeah.
So, like, that's how, you know, I'm always trying to figure out a way how to make money, you know. I never had someone telling me the value of education. So I went through school not knowing why I needed to study. You know, this is a cultural thing as well. In the Asian culture, it's like studying and education comes before anything.
Yes.
You know, that is success. More important than religion, you know.
Yeah.
You got to get into a good school. You got to go to university. And they pride themselves on that. My mom was a very free spirit. She's like, you know, Just be a good boy. That's,
no more porn.
Yeah. Just don't sell porn anymore. Just be a good boy. Stay out of trouble. Oh, Jay. But I think growing up there was that bit of a hole in my heart because I grew up without a father.
Yeah.
You know, and seeing all my friends with a father, you know, like there was that hole in my heart, and you know, and as a young adolescence, that kind of plays on your mind, you know, and. As I was going, I think I kind of lashed out a little bit through violence, and especially throughout high school.
Did you have any problem back then with, you know, like racism, I guess, or, you know, having issues with people sort of treating you different because of your background?
I never had issues where we were getting bullied because I never tolerated bullying. You know, if someone tried to bully me, I'm always going to attack them.
That
was just my mentality. And because I had that hurt, some sort of hole in my heart, you know, that was my excuse to get lashed back at someone as well. But, you know, amongst our friends, there's always like running jokes and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm the type of guy who take it in the chin, but I'll give it back to them as well. So I never had much of a problem. There were some problems, but I never thought that it was an issue that's really going to change me anyway.
Were you already at that stage to learning? And I'm excited to mention this because you've only just said this to me before, but you, you know, you've excelled in a martial art that truly could well and truly look after yourself. Quietly. Was that something you were also training and studying at that age and through?
So since pretty much when I started Taekwondo when I was like in preschool.
Wow.
Like I think amongst Koreans, you know, like in, you know, in the military, a lot of the Koreans have to do Taekwondo, and yes. It's conscription. You know,
that's right. If you're 20, is it 20 or 21? 20 or 21?
18,
is it?
18.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Compulsory conscription. You've got to go to the army. They teach Taekwondo there, but majority of the kids learn Taekwondo as a kid anyway. So we learn how to kick before we can walk. So I started somewhere like in the preschool, kindergarten. That's when I started doing Taekwondo. I was a junior black belt, continued doing it throughout high school. So like someone tries to bully me, roundhouse kick to the head straight away.
now there's a picture for our listeners to why Joe was extremely confident about being a very strong, independent young man.
But this violence thing didn't get me anywhere because it really attracted the wrong crowd. You know, I feel that, you know, kids from broken homes all kind of gravitate towards each other.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Funny that, isn't it?
Gangs. Yeah, talking about gangs. And, you know, as soon as I started getting into a little bit of fights here and there at school, you know, it attracted, you know, the attention of local gangs. And, you know, they kind of accepted me in, you know, they showed me some love. And it just felt like, you know, those brothers that I never had, being an only child, felt like the father figure that I never had.
Was it an Asian gang? Was it like, I grew up and it was all, you know, 5T and a lot of, heavy Asian gang.
I'm not going to mention my gang. It was an Asian gang.
Yep.
And then I was just part of that gang, and they, you know, they knew that I wanted to make money because, you know, I'm struggling at home. So they're like, you know, why don't you sell this? So I started off with a little pot here and there, running pot, sending pot at school, you know, pot turned into, you know, a little bit of, you know, ecstasy and that. I never tried ecstasy, you know. So at the age of 17, my friend, he was 1 year older than me, so he was 18, I was 17. Remember the club Gas?
I do.
In Central? Yeah.
I do. Well, so funny enough, I was an Oxford Street lad back in the day, so, you know, all the clubs really started at Hellfire on Thursday night at Redfern.
So he took me to Gas the first time. Ooh. And I'm there fucking filling out a place. Like, I'm underage. They got me in, you know. They verbaled their way in. So I got in, and I'm just looking and I go, fucking what an experience, you know. It's like, you know, all the people, you know, the crowd that went there.
Yes.
They're all like, you know, they're all shady characters.
Very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, very shady characters, all off their heads on drugs.
Yep.
So fucking, for a young kid, it was a scary place. And my friend comes over to me and goes, do you want to try ecstasy? I was like, what the hell? I've never tried it before. And at that time, I didn't have any on me. So he goes, just wait here. So he walks over to a bunch of older, like Asian, older men and women. And I'm going, what's this fucking cunt doing, man? What's he doing? So he walks over there, like, he's going to get us bashed. So after there's like a bunch of random people. And then he walks over and he goes, look, he got a handful of ecstasy and puts one in my mouth. He goes, try this. I went, who the fuck are those people? And he goes, that's my uncle. That's my mom. That's my dad.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Straight into the thick of it.
First time I had my ecchi was at Gas, and man, it was the time of my life. I've seen 7 people get bashed that night. You know, it was something different, man. I've never experienced anything like that. When I tasted ecstasy, I was like, how did people not love this? You know, a lot of people going, a lot of kids at that age are probably thinking, how do I get my hands on this to take more? I'm thinking, this is a product that I can truly believe in sell.
It was very expensive back then too. I remember when it first came out, you're like, you know, the Calais splits and the baby Calais and the beiges, and they were these tiny little things, man, that you only needed one and you were in heaven, like blissing
back
out
then,
all night. And
they were so good.
I know, it was $50 and it was like $50 for the best time of your life. Like, and there's no bullshit. Everybody knew it. It was just, that's how it was. And you know, it was an era where I don't think anybody will ever understand. But it was something that you very quickly become accustomed to, wasn't it?
Yeah. So, man, I just made the decision. Shit, this is something that I believe in. I think it's good. I'm going to sell this.
I believe.
You know, because I had the happiest, you know, I had the happiest time of my life on it. I'm like, you know what, I'm going to share the love with everyone. And you know what, and I just saw dollar signs everywhere on this. So I'm going, I actually believe in this, you know. So I just started selling it underage. So I was still 17 at the time. So I started selling it at all these underage clubs because kids can't drink, right?
And no.
Look, you go, I mean, every kid is on the drugs when you go to the underage clubs, all the underage raves. You know, I started there, started selling small, and then, you know, events here and there. Where I actually made my money was schoolies.
So, oh, really?
So I didn't finish school. I got expelled from every high school, right?
Yeah.
But all my friends at the same age, they were all graduating, and I decided, you know what? I'm gonna ask the boys if they can spot me. So the first round, I went up with 50,000 pills. We drove up.
Wow.
About two weeks before schoolies, Sunshine Coast, Surfers Paradise, and stayed at a place there. Literally in the space of less than a week, that was all gone. You know, I was sending boys back down, driving back down to Sydney, carloads of cash. And I was like, you know what, next year, let's go even bigger. You know, and that's how I made my money. And ever since then, it's like festivals, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's what I was doing.
Let's be clear here, listeners. We're not here glorifying any of this either. So just understand that this is Joe's story. And, you know, like everyone we've had on the show before, whether it be a bank robber, a heroin addict, a murderer or a man that goes overseas for a living as a commando. Like this is Joe's journey, and you know it really was a part of that era, wasn't it, Joe? Like if you had a foot in the door there, you had a chance to make a good earn and a quick earn, and obviously that foot was in the door for you. What went wrong?
Got too greedy, too big, too fast. You know, and 20. Like at the age, I'm like 19 years old, you know, I'm making really good cash. And you know what? Like, once again, you know, I'm not, like what you said, I'm not glorifying crime. And
no,
remember,
not at all.
I did talk to you before and said, I really don't want to talk about my past, man.
You know, did.
It's not something that I'm proud of. But, you know, you highlighted, you know, you've got to talk about your past to show where I am now.
So well, absolutely. This is your story. And this is why you are such a great man today with, you know, nothing but compassion and care and love for people.
Yeah, so, man, at the age of 19, you know, I'm walking out the house at least 5 or 10 grand in my pocket, you know, like that's the kind of, you know, why do I want to change when everything's so good?
Yeah.
You know? And I guess at the start, you know, I was being very careful with what I was doing. And for so long, when you're living this party life and nothing's going wrong, you've got your entourage around you, like you kind of get complacent. And, We were washing our money through this lady, at that time we were figuring a way. We were partnered up with another organization who were actually shipping them their money in, and we were actually pressing the pills here.
Yeah,
and that's a cheaper way of
living.
And I had a crew of boys. I was no longer part of that that gang anymore. I ended up venturing on my own, making my own crew. Because I just wanted to stop taking all the risks that they were putting me through.
Yep. Right?
And they were making a lot of runs, and you know, it's so risky. And so I just wanted to do my own thing. And so one of my crew members ended up forming a relationship with this woman who was washing our money. Little did we know, her office was bugged, and she was washing money for 3 or 4 other syndicates.
Oh.
And
wow.
Know that he's in her office having sexual relations. And you know what young kids are like, they want to talk it up, or they're having, you know.
Yes, having, yes, like, yes, it's like, yeah.
We've got this shipment coming in.
Oh, no.
Cash coming in. And you probably got the cops listening going, who the fuck are these guys? You know, we weren't even on the radar. Who the fuck are these guys?
Wow.
And, you know, next one thing led to another. He's getting followed. His boy is now getting arrested, snitching on the whole group. And then, you know, about 6-7 month investigation, and the whole team just comes crumbling down, you know. And I went down and by then I was 21 years old. And at the age of 21, I'm getting sentenced to directing a criminal enterprise.
13 years, Joe, you were sentenced to on the top. 21 years of age, mate. That's a huge sentence, especially for someone that really hasn't spent a lot of time in jail. That's a big whack. Where was your head?
You know, when you're 21, you're young, you're not really thinking straight. So when I went to prison, I'm just thinking, you know what, this is going to be my life. You know, I had a lot of mixed emotions then. When I first went in, you know, first time jail, no matter what anyone says, you know, inside I was shitting myself.
100%.
First day I walk in, I see all these big-ass grown men fucking tattoos on their face, all training in the yard, and I'm like, fuck.
Yep.
What is this?
Yeah. It is, isn't it? I was at the Bay at 18 and ended up fucking 2 out with Ivan Milat for the first 3 nights. I didn't even know it was him until the sweeper comes in and goes, no, we've got to get you out of here, mate. You don't. And I was like, fuck, what? And they're like, do you know who that is? And I'm going, no. He said, well, that's Ivan Milat. I was like, yeah, fuck, good on you. Yeah.
I'll tell you, like, this is my first week of the experience. So I went straight to Park Lee. So yeah, I got white. I think it was Area 2. It was the working wing. All the Asian boys are doing the working wing. They're in the working wing. And I think you go to like a transit wing where they progress you into the working wing. And
right.
It's like at the time there was a bit of beef going on between the Asians and the Koori boys.
Yes.
And I didn't even know about this phone system thing. You got the Lebanese guys, Lebanese boys on one phone. Then you had the Koori boys on one phone. And the minority is like, okay, what phone do we use? So I just jumped on a phone and the guy's like, get off. I was like, no, I'll be waiting in line. And I just get the fuck off. I'm like, fuck that. I kept on waiting. The guy's pulled his shirt over my head and I started laying into him. And during, like, that was before lunch, you know, they lock you in for 1 hour.
Yeah, your master. Yeah.
So I'm fucking laying into this guy and then, like, I'm getting surrounded. And the Asian boys from the other wing, like, they've heard what's going on. They're going, what the fuck? And anyway, the bell's gone. I'm locked into the cell for lunch. They're locked in for the one hour lunch. And they're screaming out the window, going, you're fucking dead when you come out. And my cell is like, oh, mate, you're in a lot of trouble now. I'm fucking shitting myself. This is my first week in.
Yep.
I'm shitting myself. They're all screaming out the window, you're fucked. Then the sweeper comes along. You know, the sweeper's outside when everyone's locked in.
Yes.
The sweeper's out. Mm. He slides something under the door. He goes, this is from the boys next door. The Asian boy sent something. He said, they sent this man shank. My heart's already sinking because I'm shit. I'm about to get mob attacked. Now they've given me this fucking samurai sword.
Which if you don't come out armed up, ready to go on with it, you're going to look like fucking the weak one.
Exactly. So they're giving me this shank. I'm like, what the fuck do I do with this? You know, so I'm just, my set is like, just put that in your pants, just walk out and just fucking face the music on my fucking hell. And I didn't even know that there was an emergency button. And my set is like, do not press that button. And he told me what it is.
Knock up button.
So I'm just fucking pissed. Like, I'm shitting myself, going, fucking, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm psyching myself up. Okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to face the music. The screws start coming around to unlock the doors. One of the pippers, he comes and opens the door. He goes, you're going to move to the working wing now. I went, what? Asian delegate from the other wing heard what happened. And because I'm the only one there, he got me out before the drama happened. Fucking man,
that was the biggest
feeling of relief when that happened.
That's full on. Look, and you know what? You are so true about the phones. I don't know how many blokes have been jumped, bashed, and stabbed over a phone in jail. And people, I think, don't realise. Long Bay was the same. Nine Wing, you know what I mean? Like, you had three phones, and they were owned by each, you know what I mean, nationality or group.
That was the first weekend, and I'm thinking, fuck, man, is this going to be my life? You know, I know I'm looking at a long stretch. So, you know, at a young age, I'm thinking, you know, what? Screw it. I'm just going to be a career criminal. And, you know, in jail, you get to talk to a lot of people from all walks of life and a lot of people that have been in and out of prison. And I talk to a lot of this career drug, whether you want to call them drug lords or, like, career criminals who focus on drugs. And I had a chat with these guys, and every one of them have done so much time. They're in and out, and there's no guarantee. You know, these guys are talking about how they've got, you know, they've got this, like, James Bond way of, you know, dealing drugs, you know, like, they're not going to get surveillance. They do the whole, you know, they wear a wig. You know, they call it the hocus pocus. You know, like, they do the pass around, you know, they go catch a water taxi, change their clothes, you know, like shit like that, before they go do a drug deal. And They're still in jail, mate. They're still in jail. There's no safe way of dealing drugs back then anyway.
No.
So if I want to continue down this path, I'm probably looking at more jail time. And I was thinking, I don't want to do any jail time. You know, I think this stretch, this one lagging, which is like a 13-year stretch. Well, I only did 9 years because I came out early as possible release. But 13-year stretch, you know, I don't think I can do another one like that. That's like pretty much my whole life gone.
Well, Joe, in back in reality, you're doing over a life sentence because, you know, when they made life was life, you know, that was huge. But prior to that, you didn't see many sentences over 10 years. You know what I mean? The double figures, you were a full-on murderer or hardcore criminal to get a brick, you know, a 10-year brick. Here you are at 21 years of age, no prior, you know, jail sort of history, and bang, you're in the main of a main hectic jail at that stage too, mind you. Was that when Parklea was predominantly young offenders?
No, that was just after.
Yeah.
They were phasing out, yeah. So I did the whole round, Parklea, Lithgow, Long Bay, Parklea, Lithgow, Long Bay. I did most of my time in Long Bay, and I did go to the young offenders as well. But, yeah, so I'm just, you know, like, that kind of played on my mind, you know, do I have to keep on coming to prison? And, you know, jail kept on, you know, I went to about halfway mark on my prison sentence. You know, most people will be celebrating, going, yes, halfway, another half to go.
Mm.
And the amount of shit that I went through in the 4.5 years, I was just thinking, fuck, is that it? Is that only halfway? I've got another fucking half to go. This is fucked. And, man, I fell into the biggest depression. And I was thinking to myself, I want to change my life, but I don't know what to do. You know, I'm this kid, no education, you know, no family support. My whole family is back in South Korea. What do I have? You know, what do I have? What do I own? I've got nothing. You know, without the money, without the entourage, without the drugs, and I was just a kid that had nothing. Especially an Asian kid without education. I don't want to be stereotypical, right? But it's like an Asian kid with no education is like a black man having a micro penis, you know? So, fuck, man, I've got nothing.
Well, that's a fair way of looking at it.
At that time, I was reading this book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. And you know, when you're in jail, you do read a lot of books. And in that book, it was talking about how accounting is the language of business. I'm like, I think I've got a lot of bit of business flair, you know, legal business. But hey, let's start here. You know, I want to get into the legal stuff. I want to change my life around. So I went to the library, the prison library, and got myself an accounting textbook. And I've opened it up, you know, very motivated, thinking, yes, I'm going to learn some accounting. I opened it up, and mate, what I looked at is all these fucking, I looked at hieroglyphics. I was sweating, going, fuck, what is this shit? I don't know any of this stuff.
Like the language of the book, the actual context and language of the book.
Formulas and everything, I'm just looking at going, I don't understand any of this. This is fucked. I'm thinking, I'm dumb. I must be dumb, you know. I can't learn this. Now, I felt really defeated. And this was at Lithgow at the time. And I'm just fucking going, fuck this. I'm about to give up. And at that time, this guy came into the yard, and the word in the yard was that this guy is a billionaire and he's an accountant.
Wow.
Everyone is bought this guy because he's got money. He's a white collar. So he got done for Australia's largest tax fraud. It was like 300 million tax fraud. Anyway, everyone is zoning on the word billionaire. All I heard was accountant. And I went, beauty, you beauty. And I think this guy was having a nightmare of a time because he had this gigantic of a man of a celly. He's this Serbian cage fighter who was heavily medicated. This guy would be drooling all day, and in the cell, he'd just wake up from his medication, start choking him out. And he had this guy as a cellmate. And, you know, in the morning he'll come out, he's got a black guy, he's having the worst day of his life. And I went, fucking poor bloke. So I walked up to the bloke and I said, what's your name? Introduced myself. And you could tell, like, what does this guy want kind of thing, because he's being hit up.
Yeah.
He's getting paying money to use the phone. He's been paying money to call his family. You know, how fucked up is that? Anyway, I had a little chat with him and I said, I heard you're an accountant. He goes, yes, I am. And I went, okay, I'm going to give you a business proposition that you can't refuse. And I went, I'll make sure you come into my cell, become my cellmate. I'll give you the protection of all the boys and myself under one condition, that you tutor me accounting every night. And he goes, beautiful. He moved in. He became my cellmate. And not only did he keep his end of the bargain, he taught me accounting every night, but he taught me about business. He taught me about the value of education. And most importantly, he taught me about self-worth. You know, so he tutored me. And ironically, I met my first positive mentor in a prison cell.
How awesome is that, Bart? Because, you know, the odds of that, well, for the average person that would just assume that everybody's just shit that goes to jail, it's so wrong. That's not like that at all. There's so many good men in the system and so many men that have fucked up, made mistakes, that just had a bad time in their lives, that are extremely intelligent, have been extremely successful. And here you are. How's this resonate with Jeff Morgan, who we had on here as well? Jeff's story is so similar to the start of that. You know, he's doing 7 years, 8 years, and then all of a sudden, you know, he just comes into this mindset that he needs to change his world, and boom, a man, an educated businessman, broke him down and educated him language, life, and business minding, just like yourself.
I swear, you know, like, you know what, I've got a lot of respect for Jeff as well. You know, when I came out, Jeff mentored me a lot, so he's doing a lot of great things like that people don't know about. You know, Jeff's,
yes,
heard of it, and we ended up bumping into each other, and you know, we caught up for many coffees, and you know, shouting me breakfast and giving me guidance and what needs to be done, and you know, how to run a fitness business. And yeah, he's been a great mentor. Seriously, it was intense. Like being sellies with this guy, I did not realize the level of intellect you needed to have, you know, to be up there. You know, this guy, he was a billionaire. He was a partner for Ernest & Young. He went into mining. He made his money from mining. Then he went into pharmaceuticals with his money and started his pharmaceutical company. He owned the patent to the Alzheimer's gene. People had to pay him royalties to do clinical testing for dementia, you know, for cure for dementia. Yeah, so this guy was like next level. And to be able to see that from a prison cell, it was crazy. Like he used to go, all right, you're not going to sleep until you finish this book tonight. And tomorrow morning, you're going to tell me what that book was about. And here I am, just this kid that just wanted to learn. I'm going, okay, I'm going to stay up. I'm going to finish this book. And I'm telling him like what I thought about the book. He goes, think about it again and come back. And he was just training me to think differently, you know. And it was, I only spent like about 6 months with him, but that 6 months was like just accelerated learning, you know. Like I've never had that much learning in my life. And I wanted that because I wanted to change, you know. I wanted to change, and it just felt like the universe put someone there and we just connected. And yeah, man, it was just a life-changing experience for me from that prison cell.
Joe, did you at that stage, and look, well, I love to refer back to Jeff. Jeff's just an absolutely amazing, inspiring man. And there were things he had to do to better himself, to be successful. One was to decide to, you know, walk his own path. You're an Asian man, you know, and I get it, and I know how it all works in there. Everybody's tight, you know, cultures all stick together like the crews. Did you have to start detaching yourself from that environment, that mentality, to start to be just on your own and start to do Joe's jail and what Joe wanted to do and start looking at where you're going to then project the future?
I'll tell you where that really came in. Training, man. So I used to train. Training for me was my way out of prison. Every time I trained, my mind wasn't there. You know, it was like a bit of an escapism for me.
Yeah.
So I train. And so my motto for my business, Confit, our motto is train to be free. That is our slogan. You know, and when I was training inside prison, my mind was free. I wasn't there. You know, I was just super focused on my training. And, you know, whenever I go into my cell, I'm running training routines. You know, how do I you know, training myself without any equipment. So even when you're locked down in your cell, what can I use in my cell to just train with my body weight and the surroundings around me with minimal equipment? And that was my focus. And you know, the diet in jail is shit. The food in jail is shit, right? I just canned tunas.
Chili tuna, Sierra's the best.
There was a point where I was just putting tuna in a bottle of water and just shaking it up and just drinking that because I needed the protein. For me, health and wellness and, you know, just trying to be fit was my escapism out of jail. And, you know, like I said, you become one way, you attract, and you, and people like you gravitate towards each other, you know. And I ended up becoming bros with all these other nationalities, you know, other cultures, you know. Like normally in jail, you know, you stick with your own kind,
yes,
right? That is the generalization of how a prison yard works. But for me, because I just wanted to train, I was training on my own. Started training with a Koori fella, started training with the Islander boys, Labour boys, and it just, you know, like for my training group was just a mix of, it was like a mixed bunch, you know, because they just loved to train. And they all believed in the same thing that, you know, we're just using training to kind of get our head out of jail. And, you know, and that's how the idea of my business started, you know, convict fitness.
So
the group training.
You qualified yourself with a degree whilst in jail, did you?
So, no. So, it was prison. They don't, when you say you want to do university, they really undermine it. They're like, oh, why do you want to do university? Because it's resources that they have to use, right?
Yes.
And I got rejected to the university. They're like, no, we don't have the funds. We don't have the staff for it. But they kept giving me excuses. And I knew they could do it. So, I'm a stubborn bastard, you know? And I just went, you know what, fuck it. I'm just going to get my cousin to enroll me, right? So he enrolled me from the outside, right? And that was another process on its own. He enrolled me on the outside as a mature age student. And I just told the education staff, fuck it, I've enrolled. Just deal with it. And they're like, oh, my God. So they just went with it, right? They were just giving – they were just probably thinking, this guy's too much of a pain in the ass. Give him a go, right? And, you know, they were rejecting me. First assignment, I get a high distinction, and they're like, oh, this guy's doing all right. Mate, they were sleepless. And I used to stay up. Like, I don't learn like all these other people. I'm on uni now, but I don't learn like these other kids. I have to spend twice the time learning.
Yeah.
But it's that determination that gets me going because I really want to do this. You know, it's not like I want to get a degree to go work in corporate or anything. I want to get a degree for myself. Remember that self-value?
Yes.
Yes. Prove to myself that this is something that I can do, and I want to prove to others that just because you grew up without an educational background, you grew up in hardship, it's anyone can do it. You know, it's going to be much harder, but if you've got the determination, and I want to prove this to society, prove this to myself. So this is the road that I'm on.
So I take it that, you know, parole comes, Joe's done enough to get his parole?
Yeah, bro. So I got out on my earliest release. So I spent 9 years in prison.
Yep.
I was doing uni in jail. And I, you know, towards the end of your sentence, you know, if you got good behavior, you got the option to go out to do works release or study release. I was at Long Bay my final few years. And this officer, again, I won't mention his name, but he was a prick of a guy, man. He was that adamant that he did not want to send me to uni. You know, my case officers, you know, they throughout my whole time, they're like, yep, you're gonna go to UNSW and you're gonna go to Long Bay because it's just up the road from UNSW.
That's right. Yep.
So my whole case, the case manager throughout the years goes, this is going to be you. This is going to be your part. You know, I thought that's what I was going to do. And when I got to Long Bay, the superintendent, he was just like, you're not going to uni. You're not going to uni, not under my watch. I was like, why? He goes, you're Asian. There's too many Asians there. We can't find you. What the fuck are you
doing? That was his excuse, because we can't find you.
Posted on, you can find me, you know. And he goes, no, you're too old to be studying anyway. And you know what? That put fuel to the fire. I just went, you bastard, now I want to do this even more.
Yeah.
You know,
so yeah.
I was fighting this guy and he dead set did not want to send him out. You know, at the end of the day, you know, Padabu, he was the general manager of the center. He's the governor of the center. He signed off on it. I'm a tricky bastard. I went behind this guy's back. I got to Padabu and, you know, I stated my case why I should be going out. And Padabu signed off on it, but you need to have sponsors at the university. You know, this superintendent, he stalled it that much. My semester started and he goes, oh, well, you don't have a sponsor. You can't go out anyway.
Oh, fuck.
He was a cunt, bro. Anyway, so I wasn't able to go out and I ended up going out to work instead.
Yeah.
But that you know, that passion, that wanting to go learn, to study, you know, didn't die off. So, you know, one month after my release, I got accepted into UNSW and I started going to uni. I got accepted into UNSW when I was in jail. When I started going to uni, first subject that I did was a course called Creating Social Change. And I thought it was some business ethics course. I'm doing a Bachelor of Commerce at UNSW. And that was the first subject that I took. And the lecturer at the time, Dr. Ali Walker, she's talking about recidivism rates and, you know, disadvantaged societies in Australia, homelessness and things like that. And I knew everything about this topic. I was like, oh shit, I know all about this. So I approached her after the lecture. And I just went, you know, great lecture, by the way. My name is Joe, and I introduced myself and I told her I just came out of prison a month ago.
Yeah.
And she's like, me? What? And she's thinking, are you a student in my class? And I went, yeah, I'm a first year student. And I told her about what I wanted to do with Confit. You know, at the moment, I'm running this boot camp at the back of Auburn PCYC, you know, with a bunch of friends of friends. And I want to turn this into a legit business. Can you help me out? It's a social enterprise where I want to help inmates coming out of prison to become fitness professionals. And she was like, okay, I'm going to introduce you to an organization called Center for Social Impact. So they're like a research mob at university. And she introduced me to them and they had MBA students working for that organization. And they put me onto an MBA program where they use Confit as a case study and they helped build up Confit to become a social enterprise. And, you know, I sat in a room with all these MBA students that are taking me through all this mind mapping and timelining. And
so realistically, you know, they're feeding you everything you need. They're giving you all the education that you could possibly ask for.
Yeah, so they were just getting all the information out of my brain. They were putting it, jotting it down.
Yeah.
Okay, how are we going to do this? It's just like a massive brainstorming session. And, yeah, I got to work with all these MBA students and I learned a lot from these guys. And the concept, the theory of a social enterprise, Confit becoming a social enterprise, started from UNSW. And I was thinking, I knew education was going to get me somewhere.
Yeah, man.
So today, Confit is a social operating social enterprise. And, you know, I'm no longer a director of a criminal enterprise, but I'm a director of a social enterprise.
You are the director and founder of Australian Confit. You are a success story that just grows and grows and grows daily, weekly. You have, I often follow your pages and I see the amount of people and you're constantly praising people for their amount of attendances and stuff like that. I often look at your stories and I count in my head the attendances because I know how many days are in a fucking year. And then I start thinking back to how actually well you're doing and how long for these people to be getting the numbers that they're getting and turning up in the attendances, you've got to have been functioning for some time. And so, you really have, Joe.
So these guys, they love it. You know, like, they're very, very supportive of me. And you know, I just recently, you know, I just told them 3 years since I've been out. You know, it was my 3-year anniversary, and you know, my clients, they were so supportive of it. And I actually bought them presents. And I said, thank you for supporting me, and you know, keeping my head up above water. You know, they're pretty much helping me to, you know, finance my studies and, you know, to have a living. And at the same time, it just showed that, you know, people don't give up on people like us. Society doesn't give up on people like us.
Not if you're genuinely going to have a go. I truly believe that too. I think, yeah, look, there's no two ways about it. I've experienced it myself. You know, I've been rejected from jobs because of my criminal history. You know, first thing I asked for is, oh, you know, can you get a criminal antecedent put out? What for? I'm the man you're employing, not my past. But they want that. And unfortunately, so many of us find that as a constant rejection, which is a big struggle.
And that's the whole reason, in a way, I started Confit as well, because it's like, you know, a lot of the boys in prison, they love to train. You know, I guess, you know, when you got that much time on your hands, why wouldn't you, right?
Absolutely. It's a good choice
to make. So you train, and when you're training every day for all those years, you're going to gain some good fitness knowledge, you know, some good raw fitness knowledge. And, you know, in prison, it gets all these knowledge gets passed down from generation to generation, right?
Yes.
A lot of the older boys, they got their way of training. They show the younger boys how this is done. Even with the boxing, they show them how to box, you know, and you come up with these fitness skills. And, you know, you see a lot of these guys who get their cert 3s and cert 4s who become, you know, fitness trainers.
Mm.
Like, they have no fucking idea. In theory, they know how to do things in theory, right? But us, we've done practical how many years in jail, right? You know, I believe that practical is much more important than theory, right? So I was just thinking, mate, let's the fact that we're criminals, and I know the fact that these gym chains and stuff like that, they're not going to hire former inmates, because you're dealing with clients. You know, one thing that goes wrong, that's a security risk. That's a security risk for the gyms, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, this Confit idea is going to be the best, because we're not going to hide the fact that we're former inmates. We're going to actually promote the fact that we're inmates, but we're doing something to change our lives around, to give back to society through fitness. You know, we want to give back to the community. And that's what I want our Confit trainers to do. They're giving back in a way. You know, they're helping people to get fit. And, you know, I've got this thing called the G-code. You know, and I run this. This is why I'm the trainer for Google and Atlassian, is because, you know, I don't just train them physically, but I train them on a mindset level as well. So the G code, you know how inmates live by a certain code? We live by a code.
Yep.
You know, the code of secrecy, the code of shutting your fucking mouth, having each other's back, don't go back on your word. I believe that we've got to live by a new code. And this is something that I learned while I was in prison. And it's the G code. And it's around gratitude, it's around goal setting, and being grounded. And these are the three principles that I use to be the happiest man in prison. You know, if everyone knows me, the people that know me from jail, I still laugh every day. I was the happiest guy, you know? I was happy. Like, even Wayne, I know Wayne Cleveland was on this show.
Oh, Wayne's a legend. No, Wayne will.
Laughing every day, and, you know, all the other inmates are looking at us going, look at these little ticks. They're in jail and they're fucking laughing and having a ball, you know, having the best time of life. But it was my mentality, because, you know, gratitude, I was always grateful for what I had and what I didn't have. At least I had a body that I could train, you know. Some people don't even have that. They've got so many health defects and stuff like that. Goals is something, you know, everyone has to look forward to something, right?
Mm.
When you're stuck in jail, you're just stuck in jail, and people just think about the now and go, fucking hell, like, I'm not going anywhere. People automatically get depressed. You know, setting goals for me was having hope. Having hope on the outside, when I get out, my life is going to be different. I'm going to make that change. I'm going to do something different with my life. I don't know how that's going to look, but I have some sort of hope that it's going to be different. And that kept me going to set goals. So, for example, studying, my training, whatever it was, that was me setting goals to have this endless hopes that I would live a better life when I got out of those walls, you know. And the last one was being grounded. And, you know, automatically when you're in prison, you compare yourself to everyone on the outside, you know, because stuck in jail, you're not going anywhere. Your life is in a standstill. Everyone on the outside, they're moving, and they're going on holidays, they're buying houses, they're having families, you know, whatever, name it, whatever, you know, they're moving up in the corporate world, whatever it is, like, they're moving, but you're not, you're in a standstill, and automatically you can't but compare yourself with the outside world.
Yep, and totally agree.
Fuck, you know, I'm not going anywhere. And This was toxic. This thought of comparing myself to everyone else was toxic to my soul, especially when that, you know what it's like, when that cell door closes, it's nothing but you and your thoughts.
100%.
Nothing but time and your thoughts, right? And
I always struggled with lock-ins because of that. I was one out. Like, I did my whole time one out, which I'm grateful for, but a lot of it I spent in Segra and a lot of it I was just a cunt. But once I actually pulled my head out of my ass and realised that I needed to make change and get shit together, all the 6 years I was doing was going to be another 10 when I got out. The problem was for me was learning exactly what you said, taking that alone time and finding something in it that you can benefit yourself and learn from yourself, really learn who you are, I think, to become a better man.
I seen my billionaire mentor, and he had all the money in the world, but he wasn't happy, you know? And I learned that. There's a famous saying, if you can't be happy with $1, you're not going to be happy with $1 million, no matter what. Right now, people might be thinking, give me $1 million, I'll be the happiest person. You know? But when that $1 million becomes normality, you know?
It's more right trouble.
I'm happy because you're going from here to here.
Yeah.
Imagine you're here the whole time. You know, you're up here the whole time. Like, it's $1 million normality. Like, if you don't find that happiness within, and you find gratitude in like little things in life, you know, you're just gonna be a miserable bastard. You know, a lot of people go, well, how do I feel grateful? You know, and I always tell people, think about that one time when you hit rock bottom. When you hit rock bottom, how were you feeling then? You know, and think about how much you've progressed and you've grown, where you are now, you know, and compare yourself to where you were when you hit rock bottom to where you hit now, and how many things you've achieved and who you are now. Are you grateful for that? Are you grateful for your morning coffees so that you're not a fucking zombie in the morning? You know, are you grateful for your family? Imagine if you had your family taken away from you. Being the best that you can be. Don't compare yourself with others. You know, like, everyone in society these days, you know, social media, they put up all this fucking, you know, fake shit. You know, it's not really real reality, right?
No.
And people think, oh, man, I don't have this. You know, and that just automatically become depressed. That is the same concept when we were in jail. You know, you're in jail, right? Our reality is prison. We saw people moving ahead in the outside world. And for me, that was toxic to myself. And I just wanted to cut myself from that thought and go, you know what? I don't want to think about all these people on the outside. I don't want to compare myself with anyone else. I just want to run my own race. If I know that I can be the best that I can be today, I'm a happy man, you know? And that's what builds you every day. If you have that thought, I'm just going to be the best in what I'm doing right now. I know, even if I'm the shittest one in the room, but I know that I did my best.
You can be happy with it. Yeah.
You know? I don't want to compare myself, you know?
Yep.
Because people can themselves too many times. So they're the three pillars, they're the three principles that I live by to be a positive person in prison, you know. And I came out into society and I've seen so many people, they're depressed, they're going through the same shit, and I'm like, you know what, like, I'm gonna help these guys to break out of the society's prisons. You know, it's a metaphorical prison. I'm gonna help these guys to train to be free. That's why the logo, that's my slogan, train to be free. You know?
I love it, to be honest. I think it's fucking great.
That is the G code that I teach people. You know, I do a lot of workshops for corporates as well. And I base it around the G code, being grateful, setting goals to move forward, and to be grounded, to be the best that you can be. You know, and they're the three principles to become positive in life. You know?
I'd like to touch on the fact that not only have you been successful in the corporate sector and helping a lot of people that probably didn't feel that that they needed it. But obviously, you know, you've been able to show them different. But you've been able to get a foot in the door with our youth. Like, how awesome.
Mate, that, to be honest with you, that just happened. Like, I wasn't even knocking on the door or anything. You know, I've been, you know, grateful enough to have some people coming up saying, look, we want to do a video story of you. And the first video came out, went up on YouTube about Confit, what we're trying to do with Confit, just to get our name out there. And that kind of got some good traction. And then, you know, I did a few more, media releases on Channel 10 and things like that, and I've been on the newspaper. And then one of the guys from, I think, one of the staff from Frank Baxter Juvenile Correctional Center, they saw this and they reached out and go, hey, do you want to do something for our young fellas? And I was like, man, I'm more than happy. This is definitely a way that I can give back to society. And I just went in. It wasn't even really planned. Just went in, ran a training session for the boys, had a chat. Then I had a chat with all the staff about the realities, you know, and I think it really hit all the staff as well, you know, what it's like for these kids to go to adult jails. And then that happened, and every other center, they heard about, all the other centers heard about what I did at Frank Baxter, and they're calling me in. And, mate, like, I want this as an ongoing program. And, you know, the kids are loving it. You know, the kids who are actually part of that program are coming out, and they're actually on their own accord, like, searching us up on Instagram, and they're joining us in our training sessions. You know, they're coming out, and
you got to remember one thing, bro. And I'm going to say this, I'll be very fucking straight up. You're a very relatable guy. You come across as someone who, like I said before, I could sit down and chat with for hours. I'm sure there'd be hours of laughter, and you know, just your smile is vibrant. Everything about you, and I'm looking at you, and it's just a positive. You know, it's a good, uplifting person in front of me. Those boys that don't have anything really when it comes to a mentor, someone that they respect and looked up to, you got to remember, you're not a screw. You're coming in there as someone that's lived their experience. So instantly they're going to have a connection with you. And especially when they do get to hear a little bit about who Joe is, man, whoa, this guy's no Gronk. This guy's been out there. He's done a big whack. Oh, wow. Next minute, you're giving them some tools that are going to help them to become better men. Who better to do? I always talk about this, and I'm a massive believer. I've done some things through mental health over the years and worked with a lot of great people. And I'm a massive believer that lived experience is so valuable. You talk about the textbook factor before, and, you know, the just trainer, you guys having so many years, hands-on experience, living it. That right there is what's value, and what we need to do as a community, a society, is embrace people with lived experience. People respect that. You know what I mean? And to me, you are so valuable to what you're contributing to within our future young men and young women, if you're given that opportunity as well. But we're specifically talking about young men in boys' homes at the moment. And Joe, how awesome.
Yeah, we were, and talking about young women as well. So I've been approached by Rebe Juvenile Correctional Center, and they're the only center in the state that hold young female inmates. And they told me not to call them inmates. We're meant to address them as young people, apparently.
Young persons. Yeah.
apparently, there's a huge problem amongst young females with diabetes when they go to prison. They don't train. They're not like guys. We go to jail, you know, we do some push-ups, squats, some pull-ups. But with women, it's very different. You know, they don't train. I think there's a lot of other underlying issues when they go to prison, you know, especially adult women, and they've got kids. You know, their crime is somewhat linked to their partners. It's funny, you know, as soon as people found out that I'm going into juvenile centers, you know, companies such as Lululemon, they're a massive international company. They're like an activewear brand. They're huge amongst
women. Oh, God, there you go. How would I know what women activewear?
They're trying to get into the men's clothing line, but they're massive. I guess all the female listening to this, they all know what Lululemon is. They've probably got a pair of Lululemon pants at home, but it's bloody expensive. It's like $130 for leggings.
Ooh.
But they do a lot of great stuff. You know, they one of their yoga mats are like worth like $150 or something. They would like to partner with ConFit and going into juvenile centers, especially amongst the young females, to kind of help them with the mindset stuff as well. I think more than the fitness stuff, it's, you know, the mind and the body is all connected, and just to kind of educate them around, you know, that this is all connected. You need to have a healthy mind to have a healthy body.
Isn't it funny, but a man that's just, you know, it's been sentenced to 13 years, comes out of a jail with a passion and drive to be successful in an industry that he you know, once again, Morgs and I were talking, you know, about young persons. A car thief is a great car thief, you know, a good fraud operator, a good talker that's, you know, into theft. Whatever it is, take their positive and what they love doing and make it great in a legitimate manner. You did exactly that with yourself. You know what I mean? You were always a people person. You could talk. You know, you're not silly by any means. You loved numbers, obviously, because you were very good with money. So, you know, here you are then turking it into a business. But my point being, you're also leading corporate companies into areas that you have a vision for.
You know, COVID really put me on the map. You
know, yeah.
When COVID hit, every corporate, you know, everyone was stuck at home, right? And everyone felt like, for those who have never been to jail, they're like, this is like jail. It feels like we're in jail. Like, how many people have said that? Oh, we're stuck at home. We can't do anything. It feels like we're in jail. And I went, back the fuck up. Let me tell you what jail is really like. You know, what it really does to your mind. You know, and I really got people to become comfortable being incarcerated in their homes when I told them about the G code.
Yeah.
You know, how to look for the little things that you have. At least you've got internet connection, you know, things like that. And the fact that now they're all training, all these guys are training online now, you know, a lot of fitness professionals, they struggle to make fitness programs with no equipment. And they're so used to using equipment and things like that. They don't know how to do all this body weight stuff. Overnight, we became the experts in confined space body weight training. All those years of segregation, you know, segregated workouts, you know, lockdowns, ooh, and working out in this.
And we're winner.
We became pros. And I just jumped on that and I monetized that. And, you know, I started Zoom classes and, you know, everyone started training with me on Zoom. And still today, I'm running, you know, Atlassian's training with me, you know, twice a week. You know, I train all the corporates at Atlassian. If you don't know Atlassian, they're a huge tech company. One of the biggest in Australia, yeah.
I could only imagine you wanting to help so many other inmates. But, yeah, you know, with jail, with parole, there comes legalities and, you know, association and all this sort of stuff makes it very difficult, no matter whether you're legit or not. How do you find that when you generally you see someone come out and you want to open your arms, but you know that they're that fucking fine line? How does that work, Joe?
Yeah, so parole know what I'm doing. They're very supportive, obviously, of the path that I'm going down and the path that I want to create for others as well. So they just told me, you know, you can't hang around with your colleagues because that is your condition. But with other inmates, they've just pretty much given me free rein to be able to work with.
I think they really should, Joe, because at the end of the day, you're a proven success and you're successfully growing daily. And the point is, we, you know, the return rate or the revolving door as we know it, mate, keeps spinning. And unfortunately, it's going to keep fucking having people walk through it. It's just the way it is.
54.2% in Australia at the moment.
54.2%.
That's only within the first 2 years of release. Amongst juvenile offenders, it's close to 90% will return back to prison. Isn't that fucking ridiculous?
That's actually very sad. It really is. It is extremely sad because people get caught up in a way of life. People get caught up in drugs. People get caught up in, you know, like yourself, not having that family support as such, you know, single mom and doing your best. You know, these cycles have to be broken. And the funny part about it is I've been volunteering for the last 4 years with a program called the Rise Program up here that they just pulled funding from. Now, there's not a lot on the Gold Coast to accommodate these young men who are struggling at 15 years of age and are on that path of destruction, drugs, crime, and jail. Successfully, this program has worked, and yet they've pulled funding. You know, I can't commend you enough with what you're doing and what you're about to continue to do at a completely new level. And that all revolves around guiding young persons to a better way of life.
Before I met that positive mentor in prison, all the guys that I looked up to were all the fucking gangsters.
You know, yeah.
The guys with cash, gold chains, the nice cars. And that's what I wanted. But they were the only people in my environment. I didn't see anyone else because I was never exposed to anyone else. So I was really ignorant in a sense, saying, okay, mate, these are the guys that I know. That's the world. That's the only world that I know. I guess this mentor, what he did was open my mind up to a new world of possibilities, you know. And I was like, whoa, there's another way. There's another way, you know. And I think kids these days, you know, they grow up in these communities or these environments where they're so ignorant. They only know what's around them and they go, okay, this is cool because this is what I know. I don't want to go work at freaking Woolies or whatever. I want to do this, you know. But there are other ways that they haven't been introduced to, like, if you study or if you push yourself to do other things, there's a better way of living, you know. They're all after the hustle. They want the money. But there are other ways. There are more ways to make, there are legitimate ways to make money that's going to be more than what you're going to make on the streets, right, without the risk of going to freaking prison and having a shit life the rest of your life.
You know? Were you scared, Joe, when you came out? Did you have that fear factor of failure? Was it in the back of your mind, or honestly, or did you? I mean, look, I had 3 years parole, and I won't lie, I had a goal, and my goal was to be the first in the world to cycle across Australia in 45 days, which I achieved. But you cannot help but feel, am I going to fuck up some stage? Because life gets tough, especially when you've done a big whack, and you know, you're giving your all, but sometimes it's just not enough, especially with the system. And them having the, you know, the chains on you as such, even while you're out here. Did you ever at all feel that there might have been a time that you were going to just, fuck, it's all too hard, or you could possibly fuck up?
You know, so when I came out, didn't have any family support, pretty much that old circle of friends, I really cut them all off. I didn't want any connection with them. You know, when I got out, I was offered that, like, oh, Joe, you know, you want to get back on your feet, you know, just, like, we could give you a bit of stuff. But I was like, you know, I made that active decision now, man. That's, I don't care if I'm living on the street. That's not. It's like putting a freaking drop of ink in water. You're just gonna dirty it.
Yeah.
Just so I get back on my feet. Nah. So you know, when I came out, I struggled heaps, man. Like, I was going to uni. I'm on Centrelink. You know, I'm living in this shitty little house that's about to get knocked down. It looked like a crack whorehouse minus the crack in the hall.
So legit, this is for the listeners. You did come out and do a fucking tough.
You know, the room that I was staying in, there were like holes all over the floorboard. You know, so during winter, there's like wind coming up. I'm freezing my ass off. There's no hot water in the house. So during winter, I'm having cold showers. You know, and that's where I started, man, with nothing. And you know, even when I started my boot camps, I didn't have money to buy equipment or anything like that. I just got some tires from freaking the local mechanic. Some days I wasn't even eating, but I had too much pride to tell people that I was going through that. You know, here you are, you were one time this big time drug dealer with all the money in the world. Then here I am, I'm living like a bum, and I knew in my head, fuck it, you know, I'm going to make it. I just had this determination. I'm just going to push through. And, you know, when you have that determination and will, you meet the right people. You know, call it whatever, but universe sends you the right people. It's, at the end of the day, it's about human connection. That's life, man. You know, a lot of people try to go on their own, but you meet the right people on the way, and that's when you need to connect with these people. And that's where human connection comes in. And that's how I survived all this. You know, I'm going to give credit to so many people, you know, people at the university, you know, like all these other people that I met from Google. You know, they've helped me out so much. And today, like, I'm just looking back and say, you've got to thank these people, man. You know, and just the fact that even them knowing that I came out of prison, you know. Yeah, so it's been a hard journey, but I'm pretty comfortable now. Really proud of, you know, what's happened. And you know, but it's not for me. Money is not something that I chase anymore. You know, money's something that got me into prison. For me, I've got a passion to, you know, change not my life, but to change other, to help people, to help opportunities for others as well, to provide opportunities for others and create second chances.
I really want you to give everyone a contact of ConFit and how they can get in contact with you. And if they're struggling, or, you know, somebody that needs your help, how do they find you?
I've got my website, convictfitness.com.au. or you can find me on Instagram. You contact me on Instagram at ConfitOz.
I love anybody that's written off and an underdog that comes up and is a success. And, you know, I have so many guests on The Clink, and I'm very, very honoured to share and deliver each of your stories, because they're each important and have some value to somebody out there. The amount of messages we get, the amount of connections that, you know, we have from this podcast, and people like yourself giving your time to share your story of inspiration and success, it truly does change lives. And look, each of my guests, I do ask this at the end, and I ask them if they could leave with a quote, a sentence, or a couple of words to inspire people. What would yours be, Joe?
Don't let your past or your experience or your circumstances hold you back for who you want to become. You know, you can actively make that change. You know, I say train to be free. My motto is train to be free. And training is not just about physical training. Train yourself up to live that free life. It's constant push every day. It is a battle. It is constant push. But at the end of the day, you're going to reap the benefits. You know, and I still want to finish off with one last thing. You know, my mission is to reduce the rates of recidivism in Australia, not just amongst adults, but amongst juveniles as well. I just feel that a lot of us coming out, this lack of opportunities from society, and to start that change, we've got to create that opportunities. And I love what you're doing, Sima, because society, community, listen to these podcasts. You know, they hear our stories, and that's when they start changing their mindset. What I want to do, and I think you're on the same journey, change the perception of former inmates coming out of prison, change the perception of community, because all they hear about on the media is these guys are animals.
Yeah.
These guys are crazy. These guys are bad people.
Yeah.
And look, I'm not going to lie, there are some fucking bad people inside prison that should be there for the rest
of the time. Absolutely. But there is such a good mix of men that deserve fucking a chance.
That is only a minority of the prison population. The majority are those who've, you know, gone through some sort of childhood trauma or some sort of disadvantage. And these are the people that need the most support by community and by society once they get out. But because of the fact that they've been inside prison, they've been incarcerated, they're outcast, you know, society shuns them when they need the most support out of anyone, you know. And what I truly believe in your podcast, man. Like, you know what? People need to support this, you know. Everyone needs to support this because, you know, we're telling the truth, the story of what's raw and what's happened. And what we need is for community to open up their arms, to provide opportunities for these individuals when they come out, because there's some smart and good men and women that I know that have gone to prison, but they just lack the opportunity when they come out. You know, so I keep going, Simo, man. You're doing great. And let's really fight to change society's perception, and you know, let's stop that revolving door, man.
Joe, it's been an honour, mate. And look, you and I are both living proof. We've had many a guest on here who more so, you know, are becoming successful. And yes, you need a dollar to survive. Yes, you need to pay bills. But I can assure you now, I don't make bugger all money off this, but it's something I love doing. And I do it every week to bring the best I can. And I do it with passion. I do it with, you know, commitment, and having people like yourself who of the same mindset and success and just really want to see others succeed. Thank you so much for being here. Your story of redemption is one that I'm really, really proud to have delivered. And Joe, I wish you nothing but the best. Confit is going big places. And mate, please keep in touch with us, because we'd love to hear how you go with the programs ahead.
Thanks for having me on today, man.
Legend, brother.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop. For the record, for the record, yeah. For the record, yeah. For the record, yeah. For the record, for the record.
Want to thank a new sponsor who's just come on board, Dr. Pickles Tattoo Aftercare and Lifestyle Products. They're made in Brisbane and are known right around the world. They have this amazing balm. It's called the Original Tattoo Balm. You seal and protect your tattoo with the OG. I've just been using it on my leg after I had it done, and I tell you now, my skin feels amazing and there's a great shine to it. They also have an antiseptic spray you can spray on and wipe over your tattoo to keep it nice and clean so you don't get any infections. They've got a 3-in-1 wash. It's all natural, smells great, packed full of peppermint, citrus, and wait for it, hemp oils. How good is that? Plus, they have a SPF 50 sunscreen, which acts as a moisturizer as well as protecting your tattoos from fading and stop them from getting sun damage. Right now, though, for the Clink listeners, they're offering 15% off with the code CLINK. Just head to drpickles.com. That's drpickles.com.